Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to The Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
We'll be bouncing around this hour in about 20 minutes. I have a Final Four conundrum looking for some advice. And later this hour, Rick Hahn was in studio with Lawrence Holmes, now on noon to two every day here on Sports Radio 670, The Score. My greatest takeaways were about the White Sox core, Rick Hahn's core. We'll be talking about that about 8:40. But right now we welcome in Matthew Trueblood of Baseball Prospectus, and he also has a newsletter, Penning Bull, and you can follow Matthew on Twitter at MA Trueblood. Good evening, Matthew.
Hi, Joe. How you doing?
Doing well. I was listening last night to my friends at the Wrigleyville Nation, their podcast, and I heard your appearance. And I thought, oh, wow, he's bringing up some great points. So I wanted to bring the conversation over to the airwaves here. And I was thinking about what you were saying, because with all this conversation about urgency and the focus on Yu Darvish and the bullpen meltdowns in Arlington, Texas, and then last night with the defense in Atlanta, just an awful start here. But you kind of forget, what did they change? And outside of adding utility guy like Descalso or bullpen arm like Brock, the coaching changes that have gone on. And I wanted to get your view on how relevant that is, because for years and years I hear that hitting coaches don't matter, but the Cubs keep changing them.
Yeah, and you know, I think for a long time that conventional wisdom was pretty sound, even if most conventional wisdom isn't necessarily. But a whole lot about baseball has changed over the last 4 or 5 years. And one of those things is that all the new information, all the data that's available to teams now, they put it into action in a lot of different and crucial ways. And the Cubs coaching staffs of the last couple of seasons weren't necessarily doing that as efficiently as other teams throughout the league, especially some of their top rivals.
Are you including Maley in that?
Well, that's an interesting one. And that kind of goes to the core of what we're seeing now, right? Is that maybe they're acknowledging that they made a bit of a mistake by letting John Maley go because they've reverted to a guy who was a Maley disciple, because they can't necessarily get Maley back. But I do think the coaching changes are very relevant. We still have to see whether they're sufficient, but I think they were necessary to sort of move this team forward analytically, as much as maybe we've thought about them as an analytically forward team ever since Epstein and company arrived. That might have ceased to be true over the last couple of years.
So is it fair to say, looking at on the pitching side, Bosio was an organizational hire, then Hickey was Madden's guy, and Hadavi is the organization's guy. And then on the hitting side, Maley, organization, Chile was a Joe hire, then Iaposi, also back to the organization.
Yep, that's very fair. And it's emblematic of the way the power balance between the manager's chair and the front office has swung as a pendulum over the last couple of years.
It feels like it's just a matter of time, barring an appearance in the World Series, that they're moving on from Madden, and he's going to be to blame at the end of the season.
You know, at this particular moment, I have to say I agree with you. I'm not even sure I was there a couple of weeks ago, but the piece that came out from Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney just on the eve of the season about all the work they did to sort of overhaul the organization's sort of culture over the winter and the struggles they're having and the particular way that the personnel has shifted. that writing does seem to be on the wall.
With Matthew Trueblood of Baseball Prospectus, Matthew, you alluded to the Cubs falling behind with their teaching and with some of the information that they have. Can you delve into that a little bit?
Sure. So, like I said, a whole lot about the game has changed, and I think a lot of those changes are things that we recognize that have been major conversation pieces over the last few years. Things like defensive shifts, the launch angle revolution, right, strikeouts always climbing, stuff like this. But there are more granular elements to those changes that sometimes slip below the main conversation levels of the mainstream, but that are really elemental to teams succeeding in adapting as the environment changes. That includes things like the league is throwing massively more sliders than they were even a few years ago, and many, many fewer sinkers. That's a trend that the Cubs have been completely left in the dust on. I mean, I think it's probably familiar to most people who watch at this point. Most of the league is bringing these 96-mile-an-hour arms who also have wicked sliders out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
The Cubs aren't really doing that, and they certainly don't have it in the rotation. So some of this is on the front office, but it's also about the way they're coached once they enter the organization.
Yeah, that's been my biggest issue, and maybe I was going a little over the top just 2.5% into the season, but the way this roster is built, and they just brought it all back from a year ago, and maybe there are more issues because they've talked again and again about not having any money, but just as the other teams in the NL Central are improving, they just kind of roll it back, and the big addition is hoping that Yu Darvish is right in this season and can stay healthy.
Yeah, it's interesting that they essentially assessed that was something they could get away with. You know, even if you accept the Ricketts, you know, narrative about the payroll, mm-hmm. and we can talk to her blue in the face about that, but say they had this budget. There were teams throughout the league making aggressive trades from a similar position to the Cubs to shed some payroll, even if it cost them some prospect capital, so that they could do what they felt they needed to upgrade their roster. We've seen the Dodgers do this a couple of times over the last few years. Things like the first Matt Kemp trade where they sent a bunch of deadweight to Atlanta to get Kemp back, and that freed them up to do other things. The Cubs were reticent to do that. And whether that's because they have so much faith in what they have in-house, or whether it's because their hands were tied in some other way that wasn't true of the Dodgers, you know, at a front office level, it sure feels like they sort of stood still and hoped that the problem with their run prevention machine was simply coaching and maybe a little bit of a lack of health. But the early returns say that might not have been the case.
I'm in lockstep with Joe Sheehan. He was on the station earlier today, and he mentioned that the biggest hole on this Cubs roster is they don't have an ace. And, of course, there's been an overreaction to the bullpen and all the runs that they gave up in Arlington, Texas, still a month away from a Brandon Morrow return. With the roster they have right now, what do they do to fix this? I mean, are there minor league arms? Because that is something that they will admit to you again and again, that they have failed to draft and develop pitching.
Yeah, well, they'll admit it, but they want what they're hoping is that someday they get to spin it around and say, well, look, though, we told you we were fixing it, and now it's fixed.
Yes.
I don't think that that's going to happen anytime this year. Now, that's not to say that there isn't better pitching depth in the minors than there was even at this time last year. I think that might be true. I think if they had to make an emergency call, even for an Alec Mills, but certainly for some of the guys in the bullpen, like Dakota Mekas, Dylan Maples, Alan Webster, that they'd feel more confident doing that right now than they did when they sort of had to patchwork their way through the first two-thirds of the season last year in relief. So there are small improvements that they've made that way. I don't know that I agree that the big hole on the roster is an ace, but it just feels like a lack of volume in terms of reliable arms, both in the rotation and in the bullpen.
Yeah.
There are just too many guys, too many of these options that whenever they come in, you tense up because you know even if walks aren't coming – a lot of deep counts, a lot of falling behind. Then you get vulnerable to power, and it feels like you're choosing between giving up a double or walking the guy and getting deeper into a jam. That's what I sort of sense, and there's not an easy fix for that because it simply means they stopped short of amassing the depth of quality pitching that they should have.
Would you pay Kimbrel?
You know, I think that I would. I'm probably among the higher people, you know, on the analytical side of this whole baseball thing when it comes to Craig Kimbrel. I just don't see even some of the chinks in the armor that got talked about in the wake of his performance in the postseason. That seemed to me to be just sort of a wavering in command after a long season. He still has dominant stuff, and he can command his fastball to all quadrants of the strike zone. Some team is going to end up signing him, and he's made of pretty strong stuff mentally. I think he's going to come in and have a terrific season and prove most of the industry wrong. So, yeah, I would pay for him if, you know, there were any money.
Joe Ostrowski on 670 The Score with Matthew Trueblood of Baseball Prospectus and the author of the Penning Bull newsletter. Some fans have been upset because Kyle Schwarber doesn't get a start on opening day. He doesn't get a start last night in Atlanta. Why? Because you have a southpaw starting the game for the opponent. It really shouldn't be as big a surprise because that's how they've handled things, especially last season. Do you think that Schwarber should get more opportunities against lefties?
Yeah, I really do. You know, one of the things that Schwarber lost sight of, I think there were physical reasons for this and then mental ones too. But one of the ways that he sort of got off track back in 2017 was to start spinning off and trying to pull too much against lefties. And when he made the adjustment to sort of shore up that weakness, at first the only adjustment was he got more patient. So he's able to draw some walks against them, but not generate a lot of power. I'm seeing a guy this spring who is back in that crouch that we saw when he first came up to the majors, who is using the big part of the field. Madden talks about that a lot. And I think that is sort of an old-fashioned hitting mindset. But it works for Kyle Schwarber because there is no big part of the field for Kyle Schwarber. He makes any part of the field small. So if he can stay on those pitches on the outer half and drive them into left center, he's going to hit lefties just fine. He has 46 homers in just 749 plate appearances since he was called back up in the middle of 2017. This is a guy they need to get into the lineup more often.
So we know Madden's going to be Madden still, but it sounds like once Addison Russell does return and Javi Baez is at second base most days, I would say, thinks he'll get some time over at shortstop. But it sounds to me that you would be in favor of rolling with the same lineup, maybe not the same batting order, but the same position players on most days if you're going to have Schwarber most of the time out and left because you want to give more time to Almora and, then of course, Baez and Russell, Bryant, Rizzo, and Contreras.
Yeah, I might move a few of the other pieces around.
It's Zobrist sometime, Bodie sometime, is that what you're saying?
Right. I think David Bodie's a key piece that the Cubs are very high on, and I don't think they're going to let him slide through the cracks. So you may see Hayward slid over to center against some righties and start Bodie in favor of Almora by putting Bodie at third, Bryant in right, Hayward in center. Weird configurations like that. But yeah, I think hopefully they're going to see a little more stability this year, not because it's necessary to have stability or because that's a good unto itself, but just because what they were hoping from last season was that some of those questions about the offense would answer themselves. They really didn't. Hopefully this is the season that we do start to see some of those things figure themselves out.
Wilson Contreras is maybe honest to a fault, and he was after that Darvish start. He thought the emotions got to Darvish, and then in the offseason, he was out there, he was talking to the media in interviews, saying he just stopped working as hard as he should. He stopped lifting weights, and we saw what happened in the second half of last season as he was going through his struggles. Just taking a step back, just going outside of even last year, what has happened in the development of Contreras?
I think two sort of separate things that affect him on each side of the ball. He's a guy who has always had a little bit of a launch angle problem. Now, it's not a huge problem in his case because he's a right-handed hitter who hits the ball very hard and can do it to all fields when he's right. When he'll get into funks where he's sort of hitting it on the ground too much, then he'll start pressing, trying to generate power, and that's when you see the approach kind of fall apart on him. So he's just working his way into being the full, you know, reaching his full potential as a big league hitter on that side. The growing pains are natural. Defensively, the issues are run a little deeper. Some of those, I think, trace to when he sort of suddenly lost Miguel Montero as a backup and a mentor and a complement to his skill set in the middle of 2017. And he just hasn't quite figured out, not through any lack of work ethic or will or good intention, but he hasn't quite arrived at the point where he communicates effectively with his pitchers, frames pitches well, politics with umpires, all the little things that make a defensive catcher great.
That's interesting. Have you seen that before? Because, yeah, you're right. You have a couple of veteran catchers gone after Ross and then Montero, and then he starts to regress with the pitch framing. Have you seen that?
Yeah, well, we've more often seen it kind of in reverse, where the arrival of one good pitch framer can start to rub off in a positive way on someone who previously struggled with that skill. But it's definitely something that can move in either direction. It's one of those small clubhouse chemistry things. You know, we sort of poo-poo clubhouse chemistry in the large sense because the large dynamics of 25 guys are hard to measure or understand. But it can be kind of easy to imagine how, as a catcher, you're caught halfway in between the position players and the pitchers. And it really helps if you have someone who's also in that particular trench with you, who understands both sides, who's been there before, who might be good at some of the things that you aren't, and who can help you along. And I think Contreras and Victor Caratini could kind of both use a guy like that. And unfortunately, all they have is each other, who both sort of lack that experience and some of those defensive skills.
How do you see this season playing out?
You know, before the season started, right on the eve of it, I picked the Cubs to win the division, and I'm not ready to flip that script quite yet.
Not after four? not enough of a sample size?
That's right. Yeah, it's a ton of talent. There are some players on this team that are just incandescent. I mean, Javier Baez, Anthony Rizzo, I'm a little more hopeful maybe than I was before the year began that Chris Bryant's really going to be back to being Chris Bryant this year. And I probably believe a little more in the veteran rotation than most people do. I will say it's incredibly close, and if they don't clean up some of these things in a hurry, you're right that Madden could be in trouble. You know, they could kind of wobble off the tracks and all sorts of divisions could spring up. So it's going to be important that they get it and hold it together over the first couple of months. But if they do so, they still have the talent to get into October and go deep.
I feel bad even asking this just four games in, but is Loretta held in high regard in the game?
As far as I know, he is. I'm not the most connected guy you could ask that question to.
Yeah.
But he's certainly, you know, what I'm just getting to the age where I can sort of think back and go through my mental file and say, how much were people talking about how smart this guy was, the ways he helped teammates and things when he was an active player.
Right.
And that was definitely true of Loretta. So he's been in that arena forever. He has what a lot of the new managers have, guys like Rocco Baldelli, Gabe Kapler, Kevin Cash. He's been in front offices. So you know that he understands kind of both sides of that coin. And that's an important skill in this day and age. So I think he adds value. We're going to have to wait a while before we can assess in what way or how much.
And David Ross, too. He's done some front office work. Matthew Trueblood, Baseball Prospectus, and he writes the Penning Bull newsletter. He's on Twitter, at M.A. Trueblood. Matthew, thanks for jumping on tonight.
Anytime. Thanks.
Matthew Trueblood, check out his work. It's interesting. He's right. Like, you kind of forget about all of the turnover. We say, look at all the hitting coaches they've gone through. Look at all the pitching coaches that they've gone through. But it's been this battle, this tug of war between the manager and the front office. People that say that Madden's probably gone, yeah, I agree. I do. Otherwise, you extend him. 312-644-6767 if you want to react to anything that Matthew had to say. Also, I need to go to the other side of the glass, talk to Herb Lawrence and Mike Chen about something. I've got a Final Four conundrum, and this is going to be a rough week. I'll talk about it next. Joe Ostrowski on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Joe Ostrowski, nights on 670, The Score.
The segment on The Score brought to you by Campland RV. It's Campland RV's huge tent event from April 5th through the 14th. Find great deals just in time for camping season. Go to CamplandRV.com for details. Campland RV, RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in Northwest Indiana. Coming up later this hour, Rick Hahn, the White Sox general manager, was in studio. And a few takeaways from his conversation with Lawrence Holmes. And at the top of the hour at 9 o'clock, Bears win total was set at 9.5. I'm going to tell you which side you should bet. I think this is an easy bet. I really do. This is before the draft, before free agency concludes. I'll let you know what to do. All right, we'll get to my Final Four conundrum in just a second. Southside, Bob, you're on The Score.
Hi, how's it going, Joe? Nice to hear you on here.
Hey, Bob.
I was just, your guest brought up Craig Kimbrell and the idea of signing him. And it seems like everyone looks at that through the lens of, like, competitors signing him. I just wondered why a lot of teams in rebuilds with heavy cost control don't just give him what he wants. And then that way you've got someone in your bullpen for 3 or 4 years, however long it is. Or we see the haul people get for someone like him when a competitor's hard up. I just think you put yourself in a leverage in a situation where leverage comes back to you to move him. And if you want to, if you've got salary cap for a while because you've got a young cost control team, maybe you send him with some cash so a competitor's not taking the big hit. And I think that's a good way to help a rebuild or just have a guy there as a young team's coming up.
If a team isn't willing to just hand him cash, what makes you think they'd be willing to give up assets down the road? And when he's older, then.
I think right now when people are looking at it, it's still early in the season. I think there's teams looking and saying, yeah, we're competitors because our bullpen's set, or they think they have this arm. But when the trade deadline rolls around, when attrition hits, when guys aren't performing the way they thought, or when injuries start to set in, I think if you're a team that's got someone like that who's going out and throwing, it might not be short-sighted. Maybe it is short-sighted on the part of that team that's competing, that they want to come and get. They need a help right now, and they, you know, we've seen teams give up assets to try and win now. We've seen the Cubs do it, and it stings a little bit down the road. Yeah. However, I think if a guy like that is out there dealing on a team that's not really competing, someone could come knocking for him.
Yeah, you would still need him to be pitching at an elite level. Yeah, my guest Matthew Trueblood says he would go sign Kimbrel. I've heard a lot of people say that, especially after the series in Texas, and you lose 2 or 3 games. Why? Because of the bullpen, also because of the starting pitching. Kimbrel isn't your solution for everything, though. I'm actually on the other side of this. I heard Buster Olney say 2 days ago that he's hearing Kimbrel still wants a long-term deal. In the offseason, he was asking for $100 million, a reliever turning 31 years old in the coming months. He had a high walk rate last season, and the team that he won a World Series with had no interest in bringing him back. And they're walking into a year without a closer. Why? You could sign that guy for 4 years and how much money? And he could be an injury issue just like Morrow. And I know you could say that about anybody, but the age scares me and how difficult it is to project relief pitching. 4.5 walks per 9 innings last year. Year before that, 1.8. See how tough it is to project from year to year and how much things change? When he's on, he's among the best in the game. here's my other problem. So you have Morrow coming back in May. That's the hope. They say he's on target for that. When's Kimbrel going to be ready? He signs a contract next hour, right? How long is it going to take before he's prepared to go out onto a mound?
I mean, we saw it last year where Holland was signed like the day before spring training ended. And then they put him in the game like that week, and he was trashed the whole year.
Weren't there, Herb, we had the same issue in free agency last year. Weren't there a bunch of guys that were signed late that really struggled in April and May? I want to say there were. We'd have to go back and look. But let's say you give all that money, you give a long-term deal to Kimbrel, which I am not backing. Let's say you do that. Does he fix everything? Still got to get to him. Still need outs with this rotation and sometimes the sixth, definitely the seventh and eighth innings. Is it worth it? Is a Kimbrel move, does a Kimbrel signing put you over the top? I don't think it does. So that's why I'm not doing it. And the Cubs might be saying, hey, idiot, we don't have the money anyways. How many times do we have to tell you that? We've been saying this since Cubs convention, even before that, and you're still not believing. You're saying, you're asking about Bryce Harper again and again, even though we keep saying there's no money. Every team has the money. It's whether or not they want to spend it. I mean, Marquis kicking off in February. They have the money. But it's what they want to spend. Yeah. San Diego, where'd that money come from? Out of the sky.
And they're still talking about Kimbrel and Keuchel.
If he signs with the Brewers, that's going to take a lot of people off. And that could absolutely happen. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have clinched a playoff berth and now look to defend their division title. Be there Saturday and Sunday at Allstate Arena as they look to clinch for a third straight year. For ticket information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Herbie, Mike Chen, need your help on something. This is going to be a long week for me. Long week. Very excited. So I built what some call a college basketball portfolio. I got a lot of futures bets to win the title on multiple teams at large numbers. Two of the teams that I got were Texas Tech at 100-1, and the week before the tournament started, after hearing Eli going on the air on every show, just talking up Auburn, my greatest fear was Auburn making the Final Four, Eli being right, and I don't have a piece. So I got down at Auburn at 60-1 right before the tournament started. I was surprised after they won the SEC championship that they were still available at 60-1, one of the hottest teams around. They've won 12 games in a row now, but there they were. So I have two teams alive, opposite sides of the bracket, both underdogs. Some of my investments are on a website like Deal or No Deal in which you can press the cash out button. The cash out button, let's say one of these two teams wins a title, max winnings. If I were to cash out on both of those teams right now, I would get 17% of that. It's a good win, but not the greatest win of my life, which an Auburn or Texas Tech title would be. And then at this point, can you really hedge? Yeah, you can, but you're probably risking something. I have the underdog, so it's going to be harder to take Michigan State, harder to take Virginia on the money line. So the question is, do I ride it out, hope one of the underdogs pulls off the upset? I mean, Texas Tech only a 2.5-point dog now to Michigan State. And just pray that one of them makes the title game on Monday, or do I do some sort of a hedge? I mean, I could do a Michigan State-Virginia parlay. Won't pay a ton, maybe plus 125. But what would you do? Would you guys ride it out or hit the cash out button, make some money, some decent money, not great money. I know it's great money, but it's not an all-time money. What would you do? It'd be 17% of my possible winnings.
I would cash out.
You would cash out.
That's just the type of attitude I have. I've already pushed this to the limit, a thing that maybe I didn't think would happen. I'm not going to push it any further.
You would.
Cash out and then maybe reinvest. And like you said, a parlay of Virginia, Michigan State, take the money I won and then double up my money maybe somehow otherwise.
I actually made a lot of money last weekend. I'm not trying to do a humble brag, but the plays that me and Eli went over on early odds on Saturday morning, actually, we went 4-0 on the games, and there's so much luck involved. Like, there's no reason for Virginia to cover that game. They should have lost that game outright. Okay. I think it depends what kind of better you are. Are you willing to go all the way in? Are the chips at the middle of the table? Or you just want to take some profit? Mike Chen, what are you doing?
I think that in this situation,
I mean, part of it has to do with what you think is going to happen in the game.
Yeah, I like you said, that 2.5 on Michigan State, I like that. I would keep the Texas Tech because that's your 100.
Texas Tech can win?
I think that's your 100-1. I'd cash out in the Auburn because I think their run is getting to an end.
Man, their guards. I love them.
I agree. And guards totally win you championships. Yes. It is tried and true in the NCAA tournament. Guards are what gets you to the end. And, I mean, I really like Cassius Winston from Michigan State. But I don't believe in Tom Izzo.
Oh, you don't?
No, not at all.
Ohio State fan, people.
But in this situation, I'm a Big Ten fan. I'm rooting for the Big Ten, so I am rooting for Michigan State.
That's funny. So all of these other coaches haven't been here before. He's the guy with the experience, and you're saying that's the guy you're not buying into.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like the vibe going on with their team right now. I just don't.
There's a lot of people rooting against them.
I think so.
With Nassar and all that.
Well, not just the Nassar stuff. I think that obviously that in the first round where he went off and that whole big thing about yelling at players, I think that I just think their run ends. And
he has the best player.
He does.
Left.
Yeah. Cassius Winston is the best player. I agree.
So last weekend, great Elite Eight play. So 3 of the 4 games, the underdogs won outright. Just need one of the two. Either way, no matter what I do, it's going to be a rough watch.
You are leaning one way or the other. So which way is it right now?
My lean right now is ride it out.
Okay.
Do nothing.
Wonder what Eli or Sam would say.
Eli thinks that Auburn's winning. Straight up. I'll ask Sam Panionovich. Yeah, he was actually texting me earlier. He said he's going to listen at 9 because he wants to hear whether I'm taking over or under Bears and a half 9 win.
Is that Eli
Bears 9.5 win?
Hatred for Virginia?
No.
He thinks that Auburn's just that good.
He loves Auburn. But I told him, see, I always question some of his opinions because he did predict Michigan State Auburn for his title game. So it could be confirmation bias. Like, well, this is the game I picked, so I still think the same thing's going to happen. So, yeah. What do you think the title game's going to be? I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Here's my take on this tournament once we got to this past weekend. My take is any of these four teams can win the championship and that any of these four teams can win on Saturday and the right to play on Monday. Do you guys agree with that, or do you think there's a team that's definitely not advancing to Monday?
No, I think that...
I think it's up for grabs.
Yeah, I think that any of these teams is good enough to win. Obviously, they've gone through their brackets and they've won, but I don't know. I think it's going to be Texas Tech, Virginia in the championship game.
And by the way, Sam is listening already, and he said cash out.
Said cash out? Okay, yeah. So he thinks it's going to be a Virginia-Michigan State title game. Some texters are rolling in. 630, ride it out. 317, ride it out. That's why you got in when you did in the first place. You're right. This is a dream scenario. 847, Northside Nick says, Michigan State money line, $300. Is that your bet, or is that what you're telling me to do? Listen, that would be nice if it were to hit. Compared to these futures, that would not make me happy. 847, don't cash out. Hedge the money line on the other teams. I got Texas Tech in November when your guy in the podcast recommended them. Yes, he did. Aaron Kessler, the sports book director at the Golden Nugget, in a podcast we did on November, said get Texas Tech. He saw them at 200-1. The best I found was 100-1, and that's when I bet them back in November. He said he got a $20 bet down to potentially win $1,600 on Monday. Oh, man, their defense is so good. It's embarrassing what they did to Michigan. Embarrassing. It's always easy for people to tell you, just ride it out. At least you guys are being honest. You're putting yourself in that position that you would cash out. But I love that. If I were to throw this on Twitter, 90% would say, ride it out, ride it out. Hedging's for gardeners, ride it out. But it's not your money. That's easy to say. All right. If you want to give me some advice on that, tweet me at Joe0670. Text message is 67011. Coming up next, my biggest takeaway from Rick Hahn's appearance with Lawrence Holmes. Joe Ostrowski with you on The Score.
If you like what you're hearing, check out Joe's Gambling and Sports Information Show, Early Odds, Saturdays at 8:30 a.m. right here on The Score. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. You're listening to The Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
All right, it came to me during the break. I totally forgot to tell you guys that in addition to the bet I have on the cash out site, I also have another hefty wager on another website, which is not a cash out site. And I did this because it had this site had the best number available, and so I wouldn't cash out the entire thing because I know myself. I was worried that I would hit the cash out button. And I might Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday before the games. So that's a big part of the story, too. That no matter what, I won't walk away with just the cash out if Auburn or Texas Tech win the title, because I've got that in my back pocket, which is decent. I didn't want to say it on the air, but I told you guys, Herb Lawrence, Mike Chen, what the ultimate payout would be and what the cash out payout would be. Are you standing with cash out?
I'm thinking again, I mean, and to clarify, Sam Panionovich's point, you know, VSEN guy who used to be here, do a show with you, Chicken Dinner. He's more of a guy that, you know, he would let it ride.
He's texting me, he's like, definitely not cashing out.
And thinking of myself.
He's a gambler. He's a gambler.
What you're explaining, I said, if on Monday, if one of these teams would win and you were already cashed out, how would you feel? Or if the opposite happened, you let it ride, and then one of those teams lost on Saturday or Monday, which one would feel worse? You said one of them winning while I already cashed out.
Yeah.
So I said you should go with that feeling then. You should always let it ride in that scenario. So I'm going to go with more of a letting it ride. Hopefully Auburn or Texas Tech takes the title.
It's fair to say that letting it ride, that's life-changing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Seeing what Sam's tweeting and just getting a general feel of what you're talking about, yeah.
Here's a tweet. I'm pretty sure cashing out early and then watching the long shot cash would be more painful than watching the long shot lose. Ride, ride, let it ride. That's exactly how I feel. I think most gamblers would respond that way. That would be painful.
That's why I'm not a gambler.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what probably the professionals would do? It depends how they handicap the games on Saturday. If they definitely think it's going to be Michigan State and Virginia in the title game, they would probably cash out or find a more creative way to hedge, because then they're locking in a profit. But I'm in for the big ticket, buddy.
And you said this would be your biggest cash.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Eagles, to this point, Eagles Super Bowl last year was my biggest win. I got them at 40-1. That was huge. Huge, huge, huge.
And we could just say that you're not putting $5 down on these bets.
No, this would double it. This would double my biggest win. So
this is like, Saturday's
going to be hard.
This is not so you hard. Coming in and telling Mitch, hey, it's been real, but I'm out.
No, no, no. I don't think that you could do that. Any bet offshore. I mean, not what I'm rolling with. But
soon.
But it's, hey, honey, I know I've talked about it for years. I'm getting that basement. That's what it would be.
The man cave?
Oh, yeah.
Do it up.
Yes. That's what it would be.
This isn't, hey, we can go to Disney World like 3 or 4
times.
We
just did that.
Oh, yeah. You did it like, like in November. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. That's what I want. I need my space. Not the website. My area. Get out.
You could probably buy it for that, too.
You're not allowed. Get out. Nope. No kids' room. My room. Whole basement. Full bathroom. Whole deal. Mine. Stairs over there. Thank you. That's happening. Please. Please. Auburn or Texas Tech? You got 2 of 4. Part of me wishes that I had them on the same side. And that's completely random that they ended up on opposite sides of the bracket, because then I'm locked in to have one of the teams in the title game for sure. But instead, the pain, the misery, the suffering coming my way all day on Saturday with both games. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm also not. All right, I promised Rick Hahn. Here's 3 important minutes, Sox fans. Here's what Rick Hahn had to say to Lawrence Holmes about the White Sox core.
That was a long process, actually. That actually started with conversations going back to last season. Aloy was a guy who, unlike your typical 16-year-old Latin signee who you've known for at least a year or a year plus, we didn't have that deep 6-year relationship with Aloy and his family that we do with some of our other Latin signees, because obviously we acquired him via trade midway through his minor league career. So we initially knew what we needed to know about him from a player standpoint, from a makeup standpoint, from performance standpoint, during a short time with Winston and then Birmingham. Really, this offseason, we spent a little bit more time getting to know him, getting to know the family. Marco Patti, who heads up our international operations, and I went down there, had dinner with his family, spent some time with the mom and dad and his brother, Enoy. It is Enoy Jimenez, the brother.
So it's Aloy and Enoy.
Yeah. He goes by Enoy. That's not his real name. His real name is Caesar, but everyone calls him Enoy.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I got all that straight.
Yeah.
Okay.
I might change my younger son's name to Enoy. We'll see how this goes.
Why not?
But it was a process of getting comfortable on both sides, them knowing what we were about, the parents hearing from us, you know, what it means to be a White Sox going forward and how we view their son. We actually feel like, I personally felt like we were really close to getting something done at the general manager's meetings last November, which was about a month after or 6 weeks after we went down there and sat down with the family and the representative. But for whatever reason, it fell apart, and we started revisiting things in early March, and they came together over the course of the next, 3 weeks or so.
Why do you guys feel like he's a player that's worthy of a long-term extension in buying out those arb years?
Well, part of it is obviously the performance and how we project what he's going to do between the lines. But more often than not, you can get yourself in trouble if you're only looking at that and you're not looking at the makeup and how the player goes about his business. Aloy is a guy who is consistently trying to get better, who's consistently trying to understand what he can do off the field, whether it's in game preparation or from a physical standpoint or a nutrition standpoint. Look, last year, we took some heat for some of the criticisms we had when we were saying why he wasn't getting called up. But one of the things that was very real and we were serious about is we needed him to clean up some of his nutritional habits and some of his training habits, because this is a player who has had a little nagging things here and there over the course of his career. And the thought was, if we were able to tighten up a little bit from a nutrition standpoint and tighten up a little bit, look, he's a 21-year-old kid. He's making the same choices you and I made at 21.
Sure.
And we weren't trying to hit a 97-mile-per-hour fastball for six months on a nightly basis. Tighten up the nutrition, tighten up the training. We felt we'd keep him healthier for a little bit longer. Aloy took that very seriously, went out, and even though he's in the minor leagues and not making great money at the time, went out and hired his own nutritionist, had the guy come move in with him in Charlotte and prepare every meal for him and get himself in a position where when I went to go see him down in Charlotte in early August or so, he looked like a different guy to who we had seen earlier in the season. And that's part of what you're betting on. You're betting on the makeup and a guy who takes this seriously and wants, you've heard him say it multiple times, a guy who wants to win championships and is willing to pay the price to do that.
White Sox GM with Lawrence Holmes earlier today on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And if you're listening now, you're probably a fan of Lawrence. He made the move to middays. He's on from noon to two every day on The Score. So when there's no Cubs game in the evening, That's when I'm here. My name is Joe Ostrowski. Unfortunately, the only time that I'm here this week until Saturday, early odds, and then Thursday, Friday morning, I'll be in with Mullion Haw doing the updates just like usual. Coming up next, Bears win total set at 9.5. I have a strong opinion on either the over or the under. I'll explain. And then also, the guy that was involved in the process at CG Technology in setting all these NFL win totals, including the Bears number, is going to join me at 9:20 and just kind of explain exactly what went into this. I'm Joe Ostrowski with you. You've got the score.
If you like what you're hearing, check out Joe's Gambling and Sports Information Show, Early Odds, Saturdays at 8:30 a.m. right here on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.